In 1975, Lois Jensen was a single mom on welfare with two children. The Eveleth Iron Mines in Minnesota was just beginning to hire women, so she applied for a job and got one. Her life was never the same. After years of harassment from the men she worked with, Lois and other female workers at the mine filed the first class action sexual harassment suit. 25 years later, the landmark case was finally settled, and it changed sexual harassment law. The story is told in a new book, Class Action, written by Clara Bingham, a former correspondent for Newsweek, and Laura Leedy Gansler, a lawyer specializing in alternative dispute resolution. Ms. Gansler is in the studio with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
First, give us an idea of the kind of harassment that these women and Lois were facing in the mine.
It really ran the gamut from everything from constant exposure to sexually explicit materials, pornography, graffiti, jokes, unwanted touchings, grabbings, and it included men who ejaculated onto women's clothing left in their lockers so that women returned to change their clothes after work. Their clothes had been soiled. Tires were slashed. Nooses were hung over women's workplaces. Women were told to service their foremen. It was very graphic.
Now, to a certain extent, wasn't the harassment kind of a result of the culture of the mine and that part of Minnesota? It was called the Range, and apparently there are bumper stickers that read, the perfect woman is a nymphomaniac who owns a liquor store.
It is a very macho culture. It's a very traditional culture. It was settled by Eastern Europeans in the early part of the century, and the male and female roles have never really changed much from that time.
So there was resentment from the moment the first woman walked into that mine.
Oh, absolutely. This was really intimidation. It was designed to protect the male's dominance in the social and economic spheres in that area.
What was it that finally convinced Lois Jensen that she had to find some recourse?
She tried different strategies for coping with the harassment, from trying to work through her problems with individual coworkers and complaining to the company. And ultimately, the company didn't respond. She finally went to the union. The union didn't respond. And it was really a particular supervisor who was really stalking Lois and sending her letters that were very threatening and really made her afraid to go to work and even to be at home, because he knew where she lived. And so finally, it was that supervisor's conduct and the company's indifference to it that finally led her to go to first the Minnesota Human Rights Department for an administrative action, and when that failed, to seek out a private lawyer.
Why didn't the union help her?
It's very interesting. The union in this case ended up on the side of management. The union had a policy that union members shouldn't rat on each other. And although their complaint was against the company for not taking disciplinary action against those individuals, the men and the union felt that the women were actually attacking the union. And so the union ended up siding with the company.
Why was a class action suit? Several female workers joined into this. Not everybody, but several. Why was it more powerful than just one brought by Jensen?
It's much harder to discredit a large group of women who all say the same thing. Yes, this is happening to us. And it was class actions cost companies more money in the end. And that's what makes them sit up and take notice. It was the fact that there was a potentially large damages all of a sudden after class actions, sexual harassment class actions became possible, that companies began instituting anti-sexual harassment policies and taking steps to avoid liability.
So this was really a pioneering effort by the lawyer who recognized that a class action suit was possible in this case.
It was, because at the time, the arguments that the defense used in this case were that sexual harassment, even in a hostile work environment case, was so individual, and that women's reactions were so individual that they could only be brought as individual cases. What this lawyer, Paul Sprenger, did was to suggest to the court that they would bifurcate the case, meaning they would try the issue of, was there a hostile work environment at Eveleth Mines, separately from the issue of, how did each of the women who were exposed to that hostile environment, how were they affected by it? And the company's defense was to try and show that these women were so emotionally and mentally harmed by other aspects of their lives that whatever happened to them in the mines was not the cause of their depression or their anxiety or their post-traumatic stress disorder. And these women had all had very difficult lives. And the discovery process, the company was allowed to go back into their medical histories, their sexual histories, their family histories. And all of a sudden, it went from being about what happened at Eveleth and the conduct of Eveleth Mines to these women, and they were really put on trial.
It sounds like rape cases.
It was very similar to rape cases.
There were also some mitigating factors, too, because Lois Jensen, for example, dated a man who later sexually harassed her. She married and then divorced a man that was in the plant, and dating happened all the time. So it must have been sometimes difficult to prove harassment if you've got sexual activity going on between consenting partners that work together.
And again, I think that's why the class action is so important, because for each of these women, I think you could find things about their relationships with the men at the mines or their conduct that would at least give a company the ability to cast doubt on whether these women had been offended by this.
What ultimately happened?
They ultimately settled in 1998.
20-some-odd years later.
From the time she went to work, yes.
Did they ever get an apology from the company?
No. Eveleth Mines is under totally different management now. It was sold in 1996.
Do women still work in the mines?
They do. And actually, a woman was made a foreman in 1999. So I think there is progress at Eveleth Mines.
So how is sexual harassment law different now as a result of this case?
From where we stand now, it appears inevitable, I think, that ultimately a class action case would have been certified on a hostile work environment theory. But in 1988, when this case was first brought, it really was anything but inevitable. This case was the first time that a court allowed a class action, and since then we've had a number of high-profile class actions that it's been much easier to get that class certified. Also, this case had another important precedent was set in the Eighth Circuit opinion that limited the nature of the discovery that companies can engage in these cases, and it's really made it safer for women to come forward, because although they will still have to go through a fair amount of discovery, a lot of the extraneous details about their sex lives and their medical histories and their family histories, really, it's much harder to get that into evidence now.
Laura Gansler, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Laura Leedy Gansler is co-author with Clara Bingham of the book Class Action, The Story of Lois Jensen and the Landmark Case That Changed Sexual Harassment Law.